case for argument this morning is Kobig against Chicago.
May it please the court. At trial, plaintiff relied on the opinion of a single expert, Dr. Fintel, that Patricia Kobich died from a heart arrhythmia triggered by her stomach pain. But Dr. Fintel qualified that opinion, explaining that pain could have caused her heart arrhythmia only if the pain was, quote, significant, unquote, and occurred, quote, within minutes or seconds of her death, unquote. And there is absolutely no evidence that she experienced any pain within minutes or seconds of her death. Indeed, Dr. Fintel himself observed that Kobich's last documented complaint of pain occurred about 1:35 p.m. on June 11th, and that Officer Tobeck heard Kobich snoring about 11 hours later at 12:30 a.m. on June 12th. Plaintiff offers two theories in an effort to explain how pain might nevertheless have triggered the arrhythmia. No evidence supports either theory. Plaintiff's first theory is that there was evidence of, quote, recurring pain before Kobich's last documented complaint of pain at 1:35 p.m. on June 11, and that the jury could have, quote, inferred that the pain recurred again sometime after 12:30 a.m. on June 12, triggering her death within minutes or seconds. But there is absolutely no evidence that she had recurring pain before her last documented complaint of pain, and without evidence of recurring pain, there is no basis for an inference that pain ever recurred after her last documented complaint of pain. Nor is there evidence of the cause of pain, much less evidence that pain from that cause is known to recur. Plaintiff's second theory is that Kobich died within minutes or seconds after her last documented complaint of pain at 1:35 p.m. on June 11th. But there is absolutely no evidence that she died shortly after 1:35 p.m. Indeed, as plaintiff acknowledges, there is no evidence at all of the time of death. Moreover, all the evidence is that she was alive many hours after 1:35 p.m. For example, there is evidence that at about 8 o'clock p.m., Officer Hartford gave her two sandwiches and saw her eat them. At about 10 o'clock p.m., Weeks, another arrestee in the cell, told Officer Jones that Kobich had just fallen asleep and that Weeks had spoken with Kobich shortly before she fell asleep. And at 12:30 a.m., Officer Tobeck saw her snoring. Thus, the evidence fails to support either of plaintiff's theories. The officers are therefore entitled to judgment as a matter of law on the wrongful death claim and vacator of the amount of damages awarded on the other claims for loss of life. With my remaining time, I'll address the district court's rulings, excluding evidence of Kobich's 1998 drug convictions, excluding evidence of her arrest history, and excluding evidence of her history of drug use and addiction.
Before you get to that, the plaintiff's expert testified to waves of pain, which during the course of the day, and, you know, she was to go to court. She wasn't able to be in court. The officer didn't take her to the police station. the person that the witness who was there with her, one of the detainees, talked about the pain she was in. The expert talked about these waves of pain, and doesn't the evidence support the jury's finding that she, in fact, suffered pain right before her death because she was experiencing these waves of pain?
No,
within that 24-hour period.
The experts did use the term waves of pain. That was one of the terms they used. That was their description of the lay testimony of all the witnesses who testified. And it's an inaccurate description in certain respects. I mean, waves would connote a rise and a fall. There is no evidence of any rise in pain followed by a fall. There's no evidence of that after subsiding it ever increased. So waves is an inaccurate statement in that regard. Now the expert, there's no evidence in this record that this expert has experience or has expertise in assessing lay witness testimony, the firsthand testimony of witnesses concerning their observations and conversations with lay witnesses, and then can deduce something like waves. So the characterization of waves is inaccurate to the extent that it suggests that after her pain eventually did subside on the afternoon of June 11th, that it ever increased. Without any evidence that there was an increase in pain ever after pain subsided, it would be an improper to characterize her situation as recurring pain. Her pain did not recur. And without evidence of recurring pain at any time before it subsided, there's no basis for an inference that hours later the pain could have recurred and then caused her death within minutes or seconds thereafter.
Now, that afternoon, after she got that sandwich, the two officers on the afternoon shift never spoke to her or checked on her to see if she was okay. Is that right?
Well, the sandwiches were 8 o'clock that night. At 10 o'clock, Detention Aide Jones, testifies that at 10 o'clock, she went into the cell and Kobach was asleep, having just fallen asleep, as Weeks, the cellmate, told the officer, and Weeks said, and I spoke with her just before she fell asleep. This is at 10 o'clock. And then at 12:30, Dr. Fintel himself recognized from a statement that Officer Tobeck gave, Officer Tobeck heard her snoring at 12:30 a.m. With respect to the district court's rulings excluding evidence of Kobach's 1998 drug convictions, evidence of her arrest history, and evidence of her history of drug use and addiction, these rulings were abuses of discretion since all of that evidence was germane to plaintiff's damages on the wrongful death claim for loss of society. The court excluded the evidence on the basis that its probative value was outweighed by its potential to prejudice plaintiff unfairly. But evidence is unfairly prejudicial only where its admission makes it likely that the jury will be induced to decide the case on an improper basis, commonly an emotional one. And again, the only damages plaintiff sought on the wrongful death claim were for loss of society. And loss of society is a matter that is inherently emotional. For this reason, admitting the evidence would not have induced the jury to decide the claim on an improper basis, but rather on the exact basis that the law contemplates. Thus, admitting the evidence would not have prejudiced plaintiff unfairly, but excluding it did prejudice the officers unfairly by preventing them from showing significant problems in plaintiff's relationship with Kobach. I'll turn now to the district court's rulings a couple of the district court's rulings that allowed evidence in that were abuses of discretion for which the officers are entitled to a new trial. Those two rulings are that Dr. Fintel's separate opinion that the officers should have obtained medical attention for
COVID. Excuse me, before you get to that, the jury knew about the 2001 conviction. They also knew she was under arrest, and her son spoke openly about his mother's problems. So it wasn't that the jury just got a one-sided view of her, right?
That's true. That much was admitted. But a whole host of evidence that could have tipped the balance for the jury was excluded. The evidence of the 1998 convictions for which she served.
I understand that. But what I'm saying is they knew about the 2001 conviction. They knew about her problems. They knew about the fact that she was under arrest and that she had these various problems. I'm just trying to figure out why. I mean, I understand you would have preferred this additional evidence, but the impact that it had.
Well, the jury did not know at all about her history of drug abuse and addiction. Not at all. Did not know anything at all about any arrest other than the one that she was arrested for at the time of her death. And the arrest that undoubtedly led to the 2001 conviction. They didn't know that she had a very lengthy arrest history. They didn't know that she was convicted of two offenses and in 1998 and served an additional 4 years in prison away from plaintiff for those periods. They didn't know of the lengthy arrest history and all the arrests that kept her away from him during that period and indicated that had she lived, there was every reason to believe that her criminal history would have continued. And there's no evidence that she knew that she had ongoing drug problems. After all, at the time of her death, she was arrested on a drug charge, which indicated that her drug problems were continuing and would have continued after she lived. Had she lived, these clearly affected her the relationship between the two and was improperly admitted into evidence.
You're well into your rebuttal time, you know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Henry. Mr. Friedman.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Josh Friedman. I represent the plaintiff, appellee Maurice Kobach.
Mr. Friedman, before you get to the merits, I'm a little worried about the brief's description of your client's status. I understand how your client can be suing as the decedent's son, but it's not clear how one can sue as next friend of a decedent. And I have some difficulty with at least as far as your brief goes, the status as a representative of the decedent. Let me start with the latter. Has an Illinois court appointed your client as administrator or special representative of her estate?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I wish that information had been in the brief. So you actually have a judicial appointment.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Which is it? A special representative?
Special representative.
Special representative. Okay. That leaves the puzzlement about next friend. Does anything turn on that?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
Okay, so let's just ignore that and move on.
Yeah, I do so. Thank you, Judge.
Okay.
Your Honor, the jury heard evidence from several witnesses, including two law enforcement officials from Cook County, that the decedent, Ms. Kobach, had severe abdominal pain. Additionally, and contrary to the defense statements to this court, they also heard evidence that her pain got worse. They heard it from one of the own defendants. The one defendant that was exonerated in this case, Detention Aide Diaz, said her pain was worse from June 10th to June 11th, and then from the morning of June 11th to the afternoon. They also heard evidence from both experts, again contrary to the defense statements to you this morning, that her pain recurred. The waves of pain that Dr. Fintel testified was agreed to by their own expert, Dr. Santucci, who said she had intermittent pain. So, frankly, I'm somewhat mystified how the defense can argue that she did not have recurring pain or that it did not get worse.
Well, he takes the position that she used the restroom and she ate this sandwich in the period leading up to her death and didn't complain about it.
Understood, Your Honor. Well, under Reeves versus Sanderson, this court does not have to credit that testimony. Secondly, Your Honor, the coroner reported that she had no solid food contents in her stomach. And as you pointed out, the lockup keepers that testified to the period from 2 o'clock to 10 o'clock and 10 o'clock until her body was found, two of those three lockup keepers said they never spoke to her and that her body was, in essence, lying in the same positions when they saw her. So I think the contrary testimony from Officer Hartford, who defense counsel has cited to, is thoroughly contradicted by the other witnesses and is, under Reeves v. Sanderson, does not merit and can be rejected by this court. In addition, Your Honor, the jury heard evidence.
So your position would be the jury heard that testimony but rejected it.
Absolutely. The jury also heard an uncontradicted opinion from plaintiff's expert that Ms. Kobach's unrelieved pain killed her and that if she had received minimal medical care, she would more likely than not have survived and lived a nearly normal life. In light of this evidence, the jury was rationally ruled in plaintiff's favor on all of his claims, and the defendant's evidentiary challenges do not come close to meeting their burden of showing that the judge abused her discretion. Let's address the issue of causation. Defense counsel has ignored the central causation theory in this case, as Dr. Fentel testified, without objection. Had she received medical care when she complained of pain several times throughout her incarceration, it would have dramatically increased the likelihood that she would have survived. Under Gayton case decided just last year by this court, which defense makes no attempt to distinguish, that is sufficient to establish causation. We don't have to get to what may have or may not have happened at 12:30. Had she received that care, her blood pressure would have been treated and her pain would have been treated. And Dr. Fentel was eminently qualified, and defense had the opportunity to challenge him under Daubert and lost. He was eminently qualified to make those decisions, and he stated, based on his understanding of emergency room care procedures that he's very familiar with at Northwestern, that she would receive that minimal testing, and that minimal testing would more likely than not save her life. Again, under Gayton and Wallenstein, that's sufficient to establish causation. Even if we have to go past that issue, which again, I submit that we do not, there is ample evidence. The waves of pain theory and Dr. Santucci's intermittent pain and her pain increased. We have increasing pain and pain that came and went. From this evidence and rejecting the evidence from Officer Hartford is very possible, as Dr. Fentel testified, that Ms. Kobach, who was in a position under his understanding for the last several hours of her life, on the floor in a position which to him indicated pain, it's possible she died any time during that period, and the jury heard that evidence that her pain was increasing, that Dr. Fentel indicated that there was indicia of pain, and that she could have died shortly after Diaz left at 2 o'clock. Indeed, at 2 o'clock when Diaz left the building, Kobach had complained through steel doors that she was in pain. Diaz went to check on her, and she was so concerned that Diaz stayed to monitor her. Diaz also told her sergeant twice to get her medical care. She told her for relief, make sure she gets to a hospital, and she told her coworker to get the sergeant. So at that point, given the fact that her pain was increasing, under Dr. Fentel's theory, she could have died shortly after Diaz left. But again, Your Honors, I submit we do not need to reach that point because under Gayton and Wallenstein, the failure to get her the medical care caused her death and establishes causation under the governing case law. On the first evidentiary issue, defendants contend that Dr. Fentel gave inappropriate police testimony. Your Honor, the trial record is clear that they absolutely understood he did not give that testimony. They asked him the question, Doctor, your testimony is based on a medical doctor's opinion, right? Right. I'm not an expert in police behavior. I'm telling you what would happen at Cook County. So defense understood he was not giving police procedures testimony. What he was giving is testimony as to what medical care would be warranted in a person with Ms. Kobach's condition. That's what he said. Doctor, and I posed him this question, based on your review of the records, did you and your understanding of her symptoms that she manifested when she was at the Chicago Police Department, were you able to form an opinion as to whether she should have received medical attention? He said, yes, the severity of her symptoms should have prompted a visit to the emergency room. Your Honors, this is the second element of Williams versus Rodriguez, the seriousness or severity of the arrestee's condition. The defense seems to argue, well, that these people are not doctors, they can't see this, it's not relevant. Well, it's relevant to the second issue, and that's it picks up on the objective nature of the condition, which is drawn from the 14th Amendment analysis, whether it's an objective condition. The first issue, which defense does not raise here, but the first issue is notice, and there's ample evidence that the defense had notice that she had a problem. So Dr. Fentel's opinion was limited. Well, it was limited to the second issue of Williams plus causation. And their first argument, they lambaste Dr. Fentel. He needs to give evidence of causation. Their second opinion, they're saying essentially the opposite. He can't give causation opinion. Well, he can't have it both ways. And in any event, Your Honors, it was the jury who determined the defense acted unreasonably in not giving her medical attention, not Dr. Fentel. It was the police who gave the testimony, police procedures on the fourth issue of Williams. As Sergeant Mosley stated, we could have gotten her attention without drawing down any police resources. That wasn't Dr. Fentel. That was the police. Finally, Your Honor, defense waived this argument. They challenged Dr. Fentel in a Daubert motion, in a motion limine at trial. Never did they raise the police procedures challenge. I pointed to the transcript where every objection they made is a non-disclosed opinion, and that's what the court understood, that it was a non-disclosed objection. So they have waived this argument. The next evidentiary issue, Your Honor, is the issue of a chart. Excuse me.
Issue what?
There's a chart entitled Guidelines for Arrestee Screening. It is a chart that's kept on the wall of the 25th District in the area where the defendants sit that indicates what sort of treatment arrestees get for certain medical conditions.
Well, that chart was only admitted to impeach Diaz, right? And she was found not liable.
Right.
So I don't see how that can prejudice anybody else.
I don't see it, and the judge gave a limiting instruction. And it was not admitted to evidence, actually.
Right.
And it was not shown to the jury. So then I'll move on, unless Your Honors would like to hear more argument on that issue. The character evidence issue, Your Honors, again, as the court, in response to plaintiff's motion to eliminate, kept out certain character evidence. Arrests, her work history, her problem with drugs.
Let me pause for a minute. Don't I recall from my days back in the, well, when I was practicing law, that a wrongful death, in particular in this case, includes the, quote, loss of the future companionship, guidance, love, and affection that would have exchanged between the plaintiff but for the defendant's conduct.
Right.
Why isn't then her background and her relationship to the complainant, and the one of interest in this case, well, pertinent to the inquiry?
The relationship and her background is relevant, and the judge...
Plus the time she spent in jail where she was not able to provide anything to him.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And you know what? The defense counsel did not even ask what happened. They had the opportunity to say, hey, did you talk to your mom? Did you bother to drop her a line? Did you write her a letter?
As I understand it, the judge kept out all the record background of where...
No, she kept out one conviction. The jury heard...
How long was she in jail for that conviction?
Four years. But the jury heard she was in for 4 years.
They heard that.
They heard 4 years. They heard she was in jail twice because it was the time of her arrest.
So it's the position of the plaintiff that all of the issues relating to her relationship to the complainant are already in the record.
Anything the jury needed to hear. And under the relevant law, the St. Luke's case that I...
Why isn't it all relevant? Her entire background.
It is relevant. It could potentially be relevant. But
to the issue of damages.
Under 403,
On the issue of damages, why isn't it entirely relevant?
Well, it could be relevant, but the relevant issue in the St. Luke's case I cited is whether the misconduct affects the familial relationship.
Well, you don't think it did? You don't think that's a jury question?
According to Mr. Kovich.
Hold it.
Okay.
You don't think that's a jury question?
It's an absolute jury question.
Well, then why wasn't the jury provided with the information they sought?
The
judge ruled. You tell me why that is not pertinent to the inquiry.
It's potentially pertinent, Your Honors, but what is more pertinent is what is the relationship. And Ms. Kovich called Mr. Kovich 2 days before she died. Mr. Kovich knew she had been arrested. Mr. Kovich knew she had been in jail. And the jury heard that she had been incarcerated and had a drug incarceration. And that all...
Well, that's the tip of the iceberg, all right. But, I mean, that doesn't get into the factual problem. It leads to the relationship between the two as destroyed by the way the lady acted during her lifetime.
Right, and Mr. Kobach said, my mother had problems.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty simple way of handling it. Everybody's got problems. Actually, I've got problems, too, but I'm not burdening you with them. I just want to know why isn't this pertinent to the inquiry after how much he lost.
It's pertinent, Your Honor, but not all pertinent evidence, as we all know, is always admissible. And if the judge is concerned...
So just clarify for us exactly what was in and what was out. I know the 2001 conviction was in, and the three-year sentence that she got for that. That was in, right?
Right.
The conviction, the arrest that she was in on, which was a drug offense, that was in.
The arrest at the time of her death.
So what was out? The drug habit?
Yes, drug habit, and there was no evidence offered. There was no offer of proof by the defendants that she had a drug habit or that she had a drug problem. There was none.
Don't I understand that that was precluded by going in by rulings of the judge ahead of time?
The plaintiff opened the door, and the judge said, okay, tell me what you want to bring in. Let me know, and I want to give you a picture of her. They did not tell. They did not give an offer of proof as to her alleged drug problem. What they asked for was two convictions. The judge gave them one. Arrest.
Why one if they've got two?
Because the other one was more than 10 years, and she thought that it balances the picture, and it was unfairly...
If we're talking about the relationship between the complainant and the decedent and the loss of society, the loss of companionship, why isn't what she was pertinent to the in its entirety?
Well, Your Honor, here's what I would say. The risk here is that...
And future, too, by the way.
I'm sorry?
And a future society, which, since she's a recidivist...
Your Honor, if my mother's a drug addict, And she can't get herself together. It has no, and I stand up and say I love my mother nonetheless.
Well, that's noble of you, but I want to know if you're complaining you're losing some good companionship, and everything else. And the fact is, you're not.
Well, Your Honor, just because she may have a drug problem doesn't mean that it's good companionship. And he testified at length that throughout her lifetime, up to the day of her death, he loved her.
Fine that he so testified. The problem, and I share Judge Bauer's concerns, is the district judge hampered the defendants in putting in evidence that would support a contrary position. Many people would say that the amount of loss suffered if your mother is taken away from you is greater if the mother was objectively viewed, as society views it, a good mother, versus a drug dealer who's spending half of her life in prison. And the jury didn't know that the decedent was a drug dealer who had spent half or perhaps even more than half of her adult life in prison.
Well, I don't think that she spent half of her adult life in prison, and the evidence does not show that she was a drug dealer.
The evidence certainly shows that she's a drug dealer.
They never made an offer of proof on that issue, Your Honor.
They offered her convictions.
I believe it was possession.
The convictions were for possession, right? Yeah, okay. So, and then what was offered by the defense in terms of her habit?
There was no offer of proof at trial on her habit. I see the time. My time is up. Unless mm-hmm. there's any other questions, I thank you for your time, Your Honors.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Henrique?
So what did you make in your offer of proof in terms of her history of a drug abuse or addiction?
Well, this was on a background of extensive briefing on a motion in limine prior to trial, where the parties contested hotly all the evidence pertaining to her drug use and addiction. At trial, during a break in the testimony, and as plaintiff was testifying, in a sidebar, we said, raising, among other things, that she had a history of drug abuse and addiction, and that we should be entitled to present that evidence, and specifically mentioned her son's efforts in trying to get her off drugs being unsuccessful. So although we didn't mention everything that had
been... What was the ruling?
The ruling was the court said we're not letting any of this evidence of drug use and addiction in.
Did you then make an offer of proof?
Prior to the judge saying, we are going to exclude this. We said, among other things, she had the her son had given
evidence. Look, could you just answer my question? Did you make an offer of proof?
Well, I think it was an offer of proof to tell the judge that there was
telling the judge things we would like to show. Not an offer of proof. A formal offer of proof enables us to tell what the proof would have been. A statement, we will show X, is not an offer of proof because it doesn't show us what the proof would have been. Did you make an offer of proof or not?
No, not at trial. We didn't rekindle the offer of proof that it made.
But in the motion in limine, for example, did you use the deposition testimony of the son where the son said, did the son say, my mother has a drug problem. I tried to get her off drugs. I was unsuccessful. I tried three times. Was that in his deposition? Was that presented to the court?
That was presented to the court. I can't actually tell you whether it was presented in our response to their motion. I know it was presented in their own response when they said, here are the things that he testified to in his deposition that we don't want to come into trial, and we ended up...
And the judge ruled with him. Was there a record of conviction that was available to the judge? Did she see the record of conviction of the various times the lady served in jail?
The times that there were of convictions were listed
yes.
in the motions in limine.
Yes, and that was
physical evidence of conviction paper.
Ding, ding. Did she preclude you from any entering evidence to support that position about all the things?
Absolutely. In the motions in limine, and we cite the motions in limine, the record citations to the motion in limine, hotly contested about when she was convicted, when she and for how long she served sentences. Also mentioned again, that was mentioned extensively. The times of her convictions were mentioned extensively at the trial, when she was convicted, when she wasn't, how long she served.
Not in the presence of the jury, though.
Not in the presence of the jury. This was in a sidebar during a break in a break in the testimony. There was no – the chart was highly prejudicial. It said you must take someone for medical care under any circumstances, regardless of the severity of the charge.
Thank you, Mr. Henry. The case is taken under advisement. Our next